And that's the conspiracy of how diabetes is a government-funded program.
Type 1 diabetes sucks. We didn't ask for it.
Yes.
But we're here to talk about it. This is Zach with...
Zach.
That's right. Two Zachs. We're not sitting back to back, though, so there's no Zach to Zach pun here. This is the My Life, Your Life Together podcast. And today I have a really good friend with me who is going to talk to me about his journey with type 1 diabetes. And I'm going to share my story as well. And yes, you heard that right. We're both named Zach. Both have type 1 diabetes. We've known each other for 7 months, 8 months.
Longer than that. I met you when me and Angelia were still dating.
Yeah, but like our first meeting was like a 2-minute conversation.
That's fair.
Yeah. But out of that 2-minute conversation, I walked away being like, why are we the same person?
We instantly became best friends.
Yes, it was a stepbrothers moment, if there could be a non-Hollywood version of that. We have yet to make bunk beds, though.
Or go to the garage and do karate.
Yeah, because we're both married and fat, like we were talking about before. Well, I'm fat. He's just chunking out a little bit. It's fine. So I actually don't know your whole story. And it's been something that we were like, we got to meet up sometime and tell each other our stories.
And we just haven't.
We haven't.
Till the podcast.
Yeah. And then I was like, I'm going to start a podcast so I can have these conversations with my friends and they think I'm recording, but I'm really not. And this is
it's just a ploy to get us here.
Exactly. But how old were you?
So I was diagnosed actually 3 weeks after I turned 11.
Oh, we were super close in age.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was 12. It was a month before my 13th birthday.
Wow.
So within a couple years of each other.
Yeah. March, 28th, 2002.
And mine was October 20th, whatever that year is, because I don't math. Show off. How did you know? Would you just like end up in the hospital and they were like, yo, this kid's messed up?
No, there's actually quite a story, like a little trail that leads to me getting diagnosed. So one, growing up when I was like a little kid, I was actually kind of a little chunky little kid.
Preach it, white boy. Me too.
Yeah. Especially because, right, I was raised in the South. So
where were you living at the time?
El Paso, Texas.
Ah, that's a place over at the border area.
So Southern food and Mexican food. Oh. Like everything's fried.
Oh.
So I was a little chunky little kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I was like 10-ish, 9 or 10, fifth grade, I started playing basketball.
Like, nice.
On a team and stuff. And all of a sudden, I was like slimming down like crazy, which...
He's bringing sexy back.
As a 10-year-old, yep.
I won't leave that in.
But, so I was slimming down and my family, like we all thought, oh, it's because I'm like playing a sport now. So I'm a lot more physically active, even though I was already physically active kid. So they thought that I was just... because I was playing basketball, that I was starting to slim down a lot. But then, it was almost all the telltale signs, right? I was slimming down, losing a ton of weight. I was eating a ton, though. I was starting to get real bad headaches constantly. I was drinking water, like... nonstop. You know, most kids are like, oh, I want a soda or a Capri. Like, no, all I wanted
like
was
your
water.
Parents found you outside with like the garden hose in your mouth and you're like, this is amazing.
I mean, I have drank from a garden hose. I did grow up like, you know, playing outside,
yeah,
drinking,
I mean,
from the garden hose,
it?
You know. But yeah, so I was like always drinking water, yeah. Always obviously going to the bathroom because I'm drinking water all the time.
So
these
like
are
how
all...
long after that was somebody like, something's not right with this kid?
Well, my grandma on my dad's side, she was a type 2 diabetic.
Okay.
And so she started noticing and like she started saying like, hey, you need to go get him checked. Like these are all symptoms. Like you need to go get him checked. And at first my family were all like, whatever. Like he's a growing boy. That's why he's eating so much. Like, oh, he's playing sports. That's why he's slimming down. But my grandma on my mom's side, she's a nurse and she's been a nurse for forever. Not forever, but a long time.
Figure of speech.
Right. And so
I may be dumb, but I'm not an idiot. You don't have to clarify that much. She was born with a stethoscope around her neck.
Yes. Her first IV was in kindergarten. No, so she one day brought a glucometer home from the hospital. She brought it over to my house and checked my blood sugar just to be like, oh, let's see.
And it was white and grainy.
Yeah, I mean, this was early 2000s. The
question, so hit me with it.
I was already prepping.
Let's go.
If I remember correctly,
whose is bigger?
I don't.
Come on, come on.
So my glucose was 547.
Rookie. No, I barely got you beat.
What did you?
So, also, my grandfather lived with us. He was a type 1.
Yeah.
And so, just a little backstory for me. Like, same things you said. I was peeing a lot. I was drinking a lot of water. I was slimming down. Again, that 12-ish age frame. So I remember leaving for school one day, and I told my mom, I was like, man, I've been peeing and drinking a lot. And went to school, and I got home. She's like, we got to test your blood sugar.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't your mom a nurse or works in the...
She is now, but at the time she was a teacher.
Okay.
She actually taught at the school we went to. But my grandfather lived with us, who was a type 1. So when I said that, her brain was kind of like, skirt!
It was like, uh-oh.
And so I got home, she's like, I think we should test your blood sugar. And I was like, oh, yeah, let's do it. Because I didn't know what blood sugar was. I thought right. It was a blood pressure, the thing you stick your arm in at the right. CVS. And I was like, this is going to be fun. Yeah. Next thing I know, she brings out my grandfather's meter. He's had diabetes for eons. His finger pricker is essentially a scalpel that he would jab into his finger because he had neuropathy so bad.
Oh, dang.
And so...
Set on like the highest setting where the...
No, there was no plunger. It was literally just jabbing. Dang. Yeah, it was literally just a jab. And so she did it and I was like crying and it popped up. It was like 563. And she's like, there's no way that's right. And so she's like, I got to do it again. And I was like, no.
You're like, she's like
we gotta do it. And so she did it again and it was 560 something again. Yeah, there was like a few point difference. I think 567 sounds familiar. But she was like, okay. So we went to Albany Med and yeah, so I was 567, you were 540 something. That's pretty close though. Given that, you know, 20% range that they give meters.
We were another way that we're the exact same.
Yeah.
Is when we were diagnosed, our blood sugars were pretty much the same.
Yeah. So I got taken to the hospital, was in the ER at the hospital for a good chunk of time. I remember for whatever reason there were only like two movies on. Along Came Polly and Invasion of the Body Snatchers from like the 50s. So like the black and black and white one. And then Along Came Polly. So I went to each of those movies like seven times. And now Along Came Polly is
one of your favorites.
I wouldn't say it's one of my favorites, but I absolutely love Philip Seymour Hoffman in it.
I was gonna say they're either your favorites or you've got like PTSD from.
So I haven't watched Invasion of the Body Snatchers since then. It was whatever. Why would I?
Yeah.
But I've watched Along Came Polly since then. That movie's hilarious. I love it. And then the only reason that they discharged me on a Saturday was because my grandfather lived with us and my mom was taking care of him, and they were like, okay, he's got a follow-up outpatient this week, but we'll send him home for the weekend. And like, I remember not understanding. I was 12. I remember not understanding what it was like. I remember asking for a soda in the hospital and they were like, it's gotta be a diet soda. And I was just, okay, that's fine.
Right.
I didn't understand the gravity of the situation. And so like we got discharged and I was like, I want to go to soccer practice. We had a soccer practice on like, it was like a not official school practice, but we all small school. We all like, oh, Saturday, let's hang out for the sixth day in a row.
We don't see each other enough.
So we went there and like I was having fun, just like lethargic and stuff. And then I got home and I think it was like Sunday night. I was like playing Xbox and I remember feeling like sweaty and shaky. And I was like, what is happening?
Like, I'm so confused.
And my brother's like, you got to do something. You got to do something. I was like, I don't know. I'm just playing FIFA. And like I tested my blood sugar. It was like 80 something, which when you've been 500 for so long.
However long. Like, yeah. And so, it's like, feels like you're dying.
And so like my mom got me a snack and juice and I felt better. And like even now I look back at it and I'm like, it didn't register with me. Like, this was something that I was going to have to do an innumerable amount.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming they took you to the hospital in El Paso?
Yes.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of the hospital. So it was really weird, right? Because my grandma checks my blood sugar, which I don't know what... I was 11. I had no idea what that meant. I'm like, no,
I like sugar.
Yeah. And I see the number, and I don't know what that means. I'm 11. I don't know what my blood, what numbers it should be. I'm like, what blood unit? You know, I don't know. And I see the number, and I immediately could tell, like, something shifted on my grandma's face.
Yeah.
And got very, like, serious. And I could tell, like, she was trying not to, like, look panicky. You know, but I could tell, like, something's not right.
Grandma, you look funny.
Yeah, like, and then I looked over at my mom and I could tell, like, my mom's face, because my mom also used to work in, so she was like a phlebotomist, worked in like a blood lab and stuff. Okay. So she knew some stuff about, you know, medical field, plus my, you know, growing up with my grandma as a nurse and stuff like that. So she knew that was really bad.
Right.
And so then they're like, well, okay, let's hop in the car. We're going to go to the hospital. Just get you. Like they're trying to keep me calm. Right. Whereas I'm like, that's not normal. Yeah. You're trying to be extra, extra calm. So I know like something really bad is going on right now, you know, kind of that whole thing. But I ended up in the hospital and I spent a night in the ICU while they were trying to get me stabilized.
Oh, in the ICU.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I was super dehydrated. Your hospital must be better
than mine.
Yeah, I don't know. But I had a really terrible story about IV, them trying to put in an IV. If you,
I love bad stories. I love bad IV stories. Let alone when you're 11 years old,
yeah,
and going through something traumatic,
dehydrated,
already.
They tried to put an IV in like my right hand. You can't really see, but like this vein right here.
That's a good
for the
vein.
Listeners. It's like the one on the outer edge of your hand. I still don't like, I hate IVs in the hand because of this experience. And the first nurse came and like put the IV in and the vein rolled and they couldn't get the IV in because I was super dehydrated.
Yeah.
So that nurse then pulls it out.
Your veins were just flat.
Yeah. And a second nurse comes. And instead of being like, oh, well, we already stuck it there. Let's try a different spot. She put it right back in the same spot.
Brilliant.
And it rolled. And then she's like sitting there digging around trying to get the vein. And I'm 11-year-old, like trying not to like freak out because I'm, you know, trying to be like a tough guy. And while they're digging around in my hand with a needle.
Yep.
And then she pulls it out. And a third nurse comes in and sticks it again in the same spot and digs around for a little bit. Finally hits it and pulls the needle out, leaves the IV in. And later on, I could look and bend my wrist down a little bit, and I could see where the needle came in, bent around that little wrist bone right there, and hit the vein. So it literally, like, bent around the bone. And so for the next, like, however long I was in the hospital and they left that one in, I, like, also couldn't move my wrist because it hurt really bad anytime I moved it. So it's my great...
That's the story of how you got an infection in your wrist.
Yeah.
And but that's what happened to your hand. That's why you only have one.
Yeah, that's why I'm, you know. But I was actually in the hospital. So I was in the ICU for one day. And then they moved me to like a regular hospital room. And I was there for, if my memory serves me right, which I was 11, so who knows, but I think I was there for another like 3 or 4 days.
That sounds about right.
But it was also right, like they were having, you know, the nutrition or nutritionist come in and yeah. the doctors come in and try to explain and teach us how to do, you know, how to manage blood sugar, what foods I could eat and all that stuff. So it was a huge whirlwind for me because I was in the hospital for that long, and all day, every day, it was like new classes, learning, you know, someone else coming in to teach me something else, you know, yeah. coming in to teach me how to give myself shots, which
yeah.
freaked me out at first.
I didn't get any of that in the hospital, like I said, because they discharged me because I was just like, I'm out of here. And my mom was like, I'll take care of him.
And you said your grandpa already
had type one. So I did like all that training outpatient, which I don't know if it ever made a difference, if I would have understood the gravity more if I had it done inpatient.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to make a generalization, but like kids can only understand so much.
Yeah.
Like even my job, when I go to do a test with a kid, like they can only understand so much.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, it obviously changed my immediate life, but at the time I didn't understand how it was changing like my future essentially, and all
yeah.
the issues and all the thoughts and all the like, decision making and whatever the, you know, statistic is that type 1 diabetics have to make like 8,000 more decisions than a normal person every day.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's pretty darn true. I like to think the technology that you and I are blessed to have cuts down on decision making a little bit
yes.
more.
Yes. Now
there are times where I'm like, I kind of forget I have it.
Right.
It's like, oh, my pump hasn't beeped in a while. Do I still right. have it? Oh, yeah, I do.
Well, and that's, I think, what a big difference from like when we were both diagnosed to now. Because when I was first diagnosed, like, and it may have just been, you know, whatever doctors I had at the time and stuff, I didn't know anything about a pump for like 3 years. Yeah. So it was all, you know, injections and, you know, taking your long lasting insulin, your yeah. fast acting insulin, and carrying needles with me everywhere and vials of insulin. And so I feel like back so then,
did you have vials and syringes and you drop everything?
Yeah. So okay. I actually, that was another thing that was also difficult to adjust to, right? Was now everywhere I go, instead of being a little kid and just like running around doing whatever I, you know, little kids do, now I had to carry a bag with me everywhere, yeah. like some sort of bag.
What kind of bags did you have? Was it like a drawstring bag?
No, when I first got it, my mom found some like type 1 diabetic supply company that made these little bags, and it almost looked like a computer, like a laptop case, like okay. a soft one, but it was
nerd.
Yeah. But inside it opened up and it had a little pouch for like your glucometer. It had a little pouch where you could put like your syringes. It had little like sleeve things to put your yeah. vials in, and it was insulated and had like a sleeve for like cooler packs to keep your insulin yeah. cold. But it was also weird now, right? Because now, instead of being a normal kid, I'm the kid that carries this weird like bag around.
Yeah, it's like, it's not enough that you have this disease that's affecting your life. And like, you know, there's probably a stigma on it from other children, yeah. but like you're living with the weight of that. And then you have to carry around essentially a man purse or a backpack everywhere.
Right.
And your kids are like, what's going on, man? Oh, you got that.
And that was also before.
And kids suck.
Yeah, kids are mean.
2023, kids suck. I was bullied. I did bully people. I sucked. All kids suck. If somebody tells you that their kid is the best, they're not. They suck.
Yeah,
that's it.
That was also before the man bags, man purses, MRSE, whatever they called them. There was 1,000 different names. That was before they became popular. So I had this thing. And that's also, kids are mean.
Yeah.
Like,
they're horrible. I remember, I think the first bag I ever had was just a drawstring bag. And I literally had like my first drawstring bag. It was a Manchester United drawstring bag. I had yeah. that for probably 5 years, and then I had like a Portugal one for another, like I just like it was literally a part of me.
Yeah.
Like when I didn't have it on my back walking around, it felt weird. And like now I keep everything in a backpack and keep it in my car because I'm not carrying around stuff with me.
Right.
And partly, you know, we'll get to it, is that I've much better control over my diabetes now than I did late
when you
teens,
were 12,
early 20s. Yeah. Actually 12 to like 16, 17, super solid. I was really good. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, so obviously I started out on multiple daily injections, Lantus in the evening, Novolog with meals. But I started out with the pens, so I never had to draw it up. I mean, the Lantus I had to draw up, or my mom had to draw up.
Mm-hmm.
But I was blessed to have the pens. And when I turned 16, I kind of hit like my honeymoon period, which lasted for like 4 months or so. And the doctors were like, "Do you really have diabetes?" And did all the testing again. And I was like, "Oh man, if I don't have diabetes, this is great." And then I got like really sick over summer, and my blood sugar was fine. Every time I tested, it was fine.
Yeah.
And I've been going through some stuff, anxiety stuff. And there's a whole other podcast episode about anxiety coming out because I'm not tying it into this one. It's too big of a thing.
But that does also play a huge role and is influenced a lot by diabetes,
correct,
too. I feel like I've
it definitely
got a whole
is.
Spiel on that, too.
Okay. Well, I want to hear it.
Yeah.
But like, so I went to the doctors and I saw a PA. I love PAs, disclaimer. I love physician assistant. I love nurse practitioners. Not this PA. This guy was an idiot. I was 16 years old and we told him my symptoms and he was like, "I'm pretty sure you have leukemia. We got to do some blood tests."
What?
And I was like,
How?
And like at 16, like with my mother in the room, I was like, "What the F?" And like my mom was like, "I don't condone it, but like I'm also mad." So.
I don't condone it, but I get it. I'm thinking.
And
the
so
same
we
thing.
Left, and like she, like my mom was pissed. And so, I get blood work done. It comes back. Dude calls us. You know, screw it. His name's Bruce. Awful, awful dude.
Bruce, you suck.
Yeah, thanks,
Zach Jenkins.
I'm not saying the
2023.
I'm not saying the last name, so it's fine. He calls my mom. He's like, "Well, good news. He doesn't have leukemia. So he definitely has anorexia. He needs to go like see a psychiatrist and kind of go through that route." And my mom was like, "No." And so
he's got type 1 diabetes.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. Like, it didn't click with us for whatever reason. So we brought it to my endocrinologist. She was like, "Yeah, test his blood sugar when he's sleeping. Like, do it for like every hour or whatever." And so my mom did it. Like, I went to bed. I was like 111. 12 a.m., 1 a.m. would come around, I'd be like 400 all night long. And then I'd come down around 7 a.m., wake up at 8 or 9 because it was the summer.
Yeah.
And I'd be none the wiser. So that's how we found out that I had to, but by then I could get back on the pump. I could get on a pump. So that was kind of cool.
If I remember correctly, there's a name for that where like in the early morning, kind of like still middle of the night hours type, your blood sugar spikes.
Yeah.
Because I
it's different from
too.
Dawn phenomenon. Like dawn phenomenon is like right when you wake up. But there is between like 1 a.m. and 3 a.m., your body tends to release glucose more.
Yeah.
And that's what spikes it. But like normal people's bodies are like, "Hey, I don't hate myself. Let's fix that." My body was like, "Kill you."
Murder.
Yeah, definitely. And like even when I went back, when I got on the pump, my basal rate was like pennies, like 0.4 an hour all day, but that was enough.
Tiny.
And then it just having to get increased and increased. So you had a honeymoon phase or anxiety tie-in?
Little backstory is, as a kid, I always wanted to go into the military, right?
That was, right, I remember you saying that.
That was always my thing. And because I grew up like... both my grandfathers were in the military. My great-grandfather served in World War II. My step-grandfather that I knew and spent the summers with growing up, like, he was a Vietnam vet. He was in the Marines. So, like, I always wanted to go into the military. And there were two things that I wanted to do. I either wanted to go, like, into the Marines and, like, work towards, like, special forces, you know.
Kill Nazis?
Yeah, you know. Commies back then, or this actually, this was just post 9/11 or around that time. So it was probably, you know,
too soon. Like, that's nope. We're not going to.
Or the other thing is my other thought was I always wanted to be like a combat pilot. So okay. Fly like jets and stuff, which I thought was super cool.
That is super cool.
Yeah. So this is the weird thing is I remember after I was diagnosed, I was still in the hospital. I'd gotten out of the ICU and it was the first time that my doctor came to visit me when I got out of the ICU. And he walked in and he started talking like, oh, hey, you know, some things are going to change. Like your life is going to look a little different now that you have diabetes. And there's going to be some things that you can't do that normal people can. And the first two things he said was, one, you won't be able to do the military, and you won't be able to be a pilot or fly a plane. And then he went off into like some other stuff, which I don't remember, but it was like
those. 'Cause your brain stopped there. You were like, right. Hey, the first two things, you just shattered my right. world, everything like, I wanted for my future.
Exactly. It was like, I remembered it, he like said that and immediately it was like, oh crap. Like this is serious. Like it's completely shifting my life, you know? So it was really, for me, it was pretty quick that I realized that, wow, this is completely going to change everything about my life, you know?
Yeah.
Which I don't think I really, I mean, I was 11. I didn't really understand it. And I definitely went through a lot of denial phases throughout like teenage years and stuff. But,
if I don't take care of it, do I really have diabetes?
Right. If I just pretend it's not there, it'll go away.
Doesn't work.
Yeah, no. But I was pretty on top of it, like trying to be strong, be, you know, and take care of it. But I didn't start off with the pens. I started off with actual, you know, the syringes and stuff. And so everything had to be super regimented because I hated giving myself shots. But if I was going to eat anything, I had to give myself a shot. You know, I had to stick myself. Mm-hmm. And they actually warned us, or one of the nurses, I don't remember who, warned us that kids can go through a phase when, after they've been diagnosed, where they basically get scared of giving themselves shots and have like this weird mental block.
Oh.
Where they can't like actually give themselves the shot.
Interesting.
And it's weird because when I first started out for like 3-4 months, I was good. I could give myself the shots, all that stuff. And then I hit that. And I don't know, maybe it was like a month or something like that. But I got to this point where I just couldn't give myself a shot. Like I literally would be holding the syringe and I knew it's a shot. It didn't hurt that bad. I was starting to get used to him, but I was like holding the syringe and I just couldn't tell your hand to do what it needed to do. You're looking at it go just,
oh, that's crazy,
just stick it, you know. And
I didn't know about that, I never even experienced that.
And so it was probably about a month, and oh my then God. And so it was like I always had to have either my mom or someone give me my shots, which was also helpful because I was homeschooled at the time. So,
nerd.
Yeah.
But you're so normal.
I'm not a little bit of a nerd. I'm a huge nerd. But so it was weird. But throughout the rest of like my growing up, it was, well, part of the thing that also sucked, we joked around that kids are terrible.
I wasn't joking.
Well, kids are terrible.
Kids find every little thing to make fun of somebody else.
Right. And it was weird, right? Because if you're out with your friends hanging out or doing anything, like you're the weird one that has to bring this bag. You're the weird one that has to like bleed at the table or is, you know, pulling out a syringe and sticking yourself in the middle of a restaurant or middle of the mall or whatever. Like you're the weird kid now.
And it doesn't help because like that stage of your life, those early teen years are like when you're like you're growing and developing and like you already feel awkward. Because I remember like my personality is polar opposite to back then. Like I liked having a good time back then, but like I'm like I hated being around people. Like I was very self-conscious.
Yeah.
And now you say whatever you want to me. I legitimately don't. Like if I don't know you,
it's not going to bug you.
Absolutely. And if I do know you, there's a 90% chance I'm not going to care what you say about me.
Yeah.
But yeah, like now I don't have that. So like looking back, I'm like, I don't know if I wish I had, I don't want to say thicker skin. Cause like, I don't have thick skin now. Cause I think thick skin is just a way to be like, oh, you're taking it and not dealing with it appropriately. I'm
compartmentalizing this. Yeah. And
right
shoving
now,
it down.
Right now I'm just like, cool.
Yeah.
Who are you? I don't. Okay. But in terms of like growing up and social life, like you said, the weird kid who bleeds and sticks himself, I kind of wish I had like the gall I have now, because I totally would have tried to stab somebody with my insulin syringe and be like, how do you like it? But like, I'm also glad I didn't, because like,
pretend like it's contagious. Now you've got it.
Yeah.
Although on that note, I legitimately did have kids like sitting at a lunch table or something. If I pull out my pack and they're like, what's that? And I start to be, oh, well, I have type 1 diabetes. Like I did have kids that would like scoot away, scared they're going to get infected with the beatus.
That's funny.
You know,
it's not contagious. One of my friends drank my blood once on accident and he does not have diabetes. I'm not telling that story right now. That's going to be story and post.
That's a whole
story and post.
Yep. Whole other podcast.
Okay. I want to bring some brevity because we've talked a lot about kids being awful anxiety and stuff.
Yeah.
The weirdest circumstance you've had to like pull out your tester and test your blood sugar. Like what was the strangest environment?
Oh goodness.
I'm going to lead while you talk. I mean, why do you think?
Yeah.
So mine was, think though. For those of you in the area, which is all two of our listeners, Northern Lights, I was at a show. I was at an AFI show. And the opening band was, I don't remember who, but they were awful. But I know they were singing a song called In the Belly of a Shark. And like it was like punk music to the max. There was like a little mini mosh pit going on. And I was like, oh, I need to test my blood sugar. But we were like standing, because standing room only. And so I whipped out my tester and my brother held like his phone, flip phone before iPhones, with a little light. And I tested my blood sugar and I was like 87 or something. And then I had a panic attack. And then I went and go sat outside for the rest of the show. But I tested it in the middle of the mosh pit. So
that's actually just impressive.
Yeah.
In the and middle like, of a mosh pit.
I didn't get blood on anybody. I didn't poke anybody. Not sanitary at all. No. Like didn't alcohol my finger before or after. Gave it the old lick.
Although,
I gave it the diabetic lick.
I was about to say, as a diabetic, you learn a whole different level of like, is that sanitary? Nope. But
it's too expensive to be sanitary, idiot. Right.
Otherwise, I'd be carrying around like a pack of alcohol swabs all the time. Yeah.
Can you top that?
No, but I can say probably the weirdest place is always, because I traveled a lot as a kid with different like King's Kids, YWAM, you know, different like church groups and stuff. And so in the airport, I think was always the weirdest spot, because this was shortly, you know, post 9/11.
So and like anything electronic, people are like,
right,
what?
Electronic or syringe, like they for whatever reason they always thought it was like, ah, he's pulling out a bomb.
Yeah, you could have had a sheet of paper and people would have been like, right, what is that?
And so the other thing too was I got stopped by security like every time I went through, because they see in their little, you know, x-ray thing, medical supply stuff. Although now they're a lot, you know, more understanding about it. Although
depends which
airport. That's true.
Some airports literally they don't care at all.
Yeah.
Whereas I was like flying back from Pittsburgh once and I had my medical ID on, my Dexcom and my pump on me, and I walked through and the guy, and like he's in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But he's got like a southern drawl. He's like, son.
He's a transplant like me.
I don't know what you got on you, but you lit up like a damn Christmas tree. And I was like, I'm just a diabetic. He's like, oh, I know those. I'm like, those?
I know those.
Do we know each other? And so he's like, well, I got to pat you down. I was like, okay, that's fine. And I got to check your hands. I was like, I know. He's like, you have a nice day. I was like, thank you, Jim Bob.
Yeah. So I used to have the full, like, pull you aside in the little cubicle and do like a bag search.
What?
But now, right. And because I try to. Because I get stopped, you go through the scanner thing, they're like, what's on your side? Like, it's a dick. So I now try to like tell them, right? I still every single time, oh, well, we got to check your hands. And they wipe your hands down with the like gunpowder residue check or explosive residue check thing.
The last time we did that, like the dude wasn't going to do it. And like I could tell he was training and I wanted to be like, bro, you got to wipe my hands. But then his supervisor came over. He was like, his hands got to get wiped. And he was like, oh, yeah. And I was like, I should have told you. It made you look good in front of your supervisor.
Just walked up and been like, here, bro, just do it. So, side note to the like weirdest place. I also in the airports learned that drug sniffing dogs alert to insulin.
Well, then JFK's got some horrible drug sniffing dogs.
Well, I've been stopped in the airport with a drug dog alerting on my bag.
You sure it wasn't because you had drugs on you?
I was like 13 or 14 now. Okay, I definitely. But
El Paso. I mean, come on.
I mean, yeah, I'm a mule for the cartels. And then one time when I was an adult driving, this is when I lived in Kansas City, and I was driving back up from El Paso. There's like Border Patrol checkpoints, and I got stopped at a Border Patrol checkpoint. My entire car, like, searched, all that stuff, because the dog alerted on my car.
Oh my God.
Which I already knew. I was like, it's because of the insulin, because I had a cooler with.
Why do they hit on insulin?
No idea.
Why don't you know?
I was never part of a canine unit. Why? So, although with the job that I worked, I should have asked. I knew enough of them. I should.
Do you still have contacts? Can you ask?
I do still have contacts. Yeah. I will find out.
I want to know.
But yeah,
because that's fascinating to me.
Yeah. So it's weird. Part of me wonders though if it's specific dogs, like you think about the airport or like a border patrol checkpoint. I wonder if it does have something to do with smuggling, right? Like that was long before the fentanyl crisis, but like, you know, medical something or another. I don't
interesting.
Know.
Interesting. It would be interesting to know for sure.
Weird little theory, but weirdest place I'd check my blood. So yeah, probably just an airport. Cause I feel like people were also like overly sensitive. Like if you're in an airport post 9/11, everyone's like waiting for the guy to, you know, try to light his underwear on fire or his shoe or, you know.
Yeah. So just anything.
Yeah.
They're like, they were hyper sensitive.
Hyper vigilant.
Yeah. That's the word. Sometimes a little too much, but yeah. I guess whatever. The times they are changing. So we're both on the same pump.
Yes.
Same deck. Shout out T-Slim.
Yep. Tandem. Thank you.
Woohoo.
And Dexcom.
Shout out Dexcom.
Woohoo. We're not sponsored by Dexcom.
No. This episode is actually sponsored entirely by me. I have funded everything. So if anybody wants to give me some money, please.
We're going to take a moment to thank our sponsors for this podcast, Zach Beck.
I was on Medtronic pump for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Their sensor was the first sensor I had. The most painful thing in the history of the
thing. Oh my gosh. And plus the needle thing was like...
The needle was so long.
I mean, in reality, it's maybe like, I don't know, an inch long, but it...
No, it was at least... This is going to sound dumb, but it was at least an inch and a half, which is a big difference when you're a kid.
But I remember the first time I put it in, I was like, dear Lord.
And like
it's like a harpoon.
Yeah, and like the thing that it came in to plunge into you...
Sucks.
It was like one speed... I mean, they're all one speed, but like it was set to kill.
Yeah.
Like if your organ was too close to the surface of your body, you were going to bleed out.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I bled like a stuck pig with those sensors.
So I was on and off that for like years. And then I remember using the Dexcom G4, which was bulky and you had to use a receiver and it lost connection all the time and just like wasn't worth it. So I was on and off that. And then I was like, then I was on and off the Dexcom again until like 2020 when I like started really buckling down on my stuff again. Maybe 2019, I started buckling down on my stuff again. And haven't looked back since. Now I wear it every day and I'm like, if I don't have it, I'm gonna freak out. What were you on before Tandem?
So I was also on Medtronic. Yeah. So I was on...
Oh, I'm going to stop you right there for a second. I was on Omnipod in between Medtronic and Tandem. Don't use Omnipod. Screw them. Okay, go ahead.
They looked terrible. But I actually... So I started right on syringes and it was like 3 years before I got... No, maybe it was 2 years before I got to the... pump, but that was just I actually
pump,
had
pump
a
the jam pump it up
pump the jams.
I don't know if I can play that. We're gonna get cease and desist.
Oh, sorry. Copyright, yeah. Struck.
Sorry, tell me your pump story. I'm gonna stop cutting you off.
So I actually had a really good endocrinologist, pediatric endocrinologist. The problem was he was the only one in our region.
Oof.
Yeah,
he hated his life.
Oh my gosh. Every time I saw him, he looked like he was about ready to rip his own hair out. And every time I saw him, it looked like he had aged another 10 years. And it was now granted. So, right, you're supposed to see your endocrinologist every like
three to six months.
I could only see him every 9 months because that's he was gnarly. So overbooked. There's a whole teenage years, lots of struggles, teenage and young adult years, lots of struggles with diabetes, which I'm sure we'll get into. But part of that was he put me on the pump to try to have some more control and some more like freedom too. Mm-hmm. So I started with Medtronic and I was on Medtronic for like 15 years. Just upgrading to whatever, and I'll get this to Medtronic. They were a phenomenal company. Like,
oh yeah, I mean
they still are because insurance.
I had no issues with them.
Yeah,
just the Guardian, but that was. I'm complaining about a new technology that was coming out. Like this was the first of the first. Right. Nobody else had a CGM.
Yep.
When they released their first Guardian or whatever it was called back then.
Right, and I will have to give it to them because I hate insurance companies and they
screw insurance companies.
Yeah. They are awful. And
yeah, they are.
If you work for an insurance company, I'm sorry, but you probably had to sell your soul to the devil.
Probably.
So
what's he like?
Yeah.
Tell us, leave a comment.
So they, man, might be a good thing. We only have two viewers so that we don't offend a bunch of people.
Yeah. But one of them works for an insurance company. So now we're down to one.
Oh, dang. But because the insurance company, like, I mean, pretty much anytime I'm trying a new technology, they don't want to give it
mm-hmm.
to me. You know, they don't want to do anything new.
Yeah.
So, but Medtronic, we contacted the company and Medtronic got in contact with my doctor and then got in contact and fought my insurance company to get
Boom.
Coverage for my pump so I could get on a pump.
Boom.
I loved the pump because it gave me a lot more freedom to be a little more normal. And then I also did the sensor. And that thing, I did not stay on it very long because I was like, this thing is a nightmare, which I get as a new technology. So I just went back to being irresponsible.
Finger sticking good.
And, you know, sticking my finger like once a day, which is terrible and bad and not how you should take care of
there were
diabetes.
Times when I was sticking my finger once every 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
I mean, I also went through periods like that. So,
yeah.
But that's a whole nother part. But
I don't even know if we have time to get into all the non-compliance that we both went through. I feel like
that might be a part two.
Yeah, that's definitely a part two because there's
a whole lot.
There's a lot.
With
like
anxiety
and and I'm sure there's a lot for you. Like there's a lot that nobody knows about my journey with diabetes. Like my Lex knows probably everything by now.
Yeah.
But like my parents don't know everything. My brother, like nobody knows everything. Lex knows, I'll give her like 90% of it. But like the stuff when we were dating, mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't tell her how bad it was or right. anything that was going on with it because I was, I don't know, self-conscious about it or whatever. Like,
yeah,
it was like I would spiral into this hole of like, I'm not doing good. I'm playing from behind, and then it would just get yeah. worse and worse. And it's like, it sucked. And like, it was more than anxiety at that yeah. point too. Like, not that it was depression or anything, but like, there were definitely times where I'd be like, oh, this isn't worth it. Like, it's just not worth it.
Yep. Whew, where to start unpacking this? Cause yeah, there's a lot and a lot.
But because at this point in my life, I don't want to speak for you. Like, I've kind of blended those times together.
Yes.
Like from the time I was 17 to the time I was 24, probably maybe even 25, there was almost no care. I did enough to not get hospitalized.
Yeah.
But I didn't do enough to where I shouldn't be as healthy as I am today. By all accounts, I should have a litany of complications from my eyes to my kidneys to my feet to whatever.
Yeah.
And it's by the grace of God that I don't. I mean,
same.
I've had people tell me there were issues, or I've thought there were issues, but tests and everything are like, no, you're healthy. And I'm like, you sure about that?
You're like, how?
You sure? So, but not to cut you off, even though I keep doing good. It, but you can unpack as much as you want to unpack. So, no pressure.
I think,
but that's part the point of this episode.
Yeah. Like a lot of it stemmed from, right. It started because, one, all of a sudden my entire like life's aspirations got shattered. Yeah, which a lot of it was denial. Yeah. Like I was like, nah. And so one, and this will be something later on to get into, but one, I have a lot of faith and a belief that God is going to heal me. And I did, especially when I was first diagnosed. Especially because, you know, I had some words from the Lord, a lot of people praying for me, and I still believe it.
Yeah.
But I think at certain points, I tried to let that just like, oh, if I just pretend it's not there, God will heal me and
yeah.
it'll just go away.
So from the get-go diagnosis, you struggled with it mentally?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, right away, because it completely derailed everything that I was looking to do with my life. Right. And then it went to, like, I've got to change everything. Like, now I'm the weird kid, you know, got to deal with that. And then it's a lot of responsibility for a young kid like that take on.
It's a lot of responsibility for anybody, let's yeah. be honest, but especially a kid.
Because all of a sudden, instead of just being a kid and running around, playing, having fun, doing your thing, now I got to worry about
staying alive while doing right. that.
Like, oh, if I start to feel a little like cold, sweaty, or a little bit shaky, it's not like, oh, I'm tired. Like, no, it's like, oh, hey, you could be dead in, you know, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know? And so there's just a lot of stress in that. And I think I wanted to be normal. And I wanted to still have my future. So I didn't want to take care of myself. I didn't want to check my blood sugars. I didn't want to take shots. You know, I didn't want to take insulin.
Mm-hmm.
And like this, I will also give credit. Like, I love my mother, and she is a wonderful woman. And I can't imagine what she was going through as a mom trying to take care of her kid. But we got into so many fights over it, because she's trying to motivate me and keep me, you know, taking care of myself, because she wants me yeah. to be healthy. And I'm like, ah, leave me alone.
Yep.
And I don't want to do this. And,
yep.
You know, and so my poor mom, one of the things, and this is a very big deal for me, especially, because I know some people that have, kids that have been diagnosed and things like this. And I try to share this and let people know this is, don't use fear to motivate.
Yeah.
Cause I can tell it absolutely backfired. Cause I wasn't taking very good care of myself, but I wasn't terrible when I was an early teenager.
Yeah.
But then, like, there was a family friend who was a doctor. And I actually don't think my family either remembers this, or maybe they weren't in the room when this was said, because they tried to get this family friend who was a doctor to talk to me.
Did they try to do like an intervention with you?
Not necessarily. Well, yeah, kind of. Like to talk me into like, take care of yourself.
That'll always work for an 11-year-old diabetic.
Well, I was like 14 or
That'll always work for a 14 diabetic.
But, and going back to the like fear won't motivate, like it just brings hopelessness. Cause I remember, mm-hmm. I remember this person saying something to the effect of, well, if you don't take care of yourself now, then by the time you're in your 30s, like you'll start losing your eyesight, you'll start like your kidneys will start failing, you'll start like losing your feet, your hands, like your circulation, you'll go blind, like, you'll be dying.
And, like, what's up with that? Like, of course we know that. Like,
we know that there
especially
are risks.
Kids growing up now, like with the internet and stuff, the first thing kids do is probably Google it now or whatever. WebMD. Like, yeah, like, of course we know that. Telling us that, it's like, why do people think that's going to work? Like you said, like, fear's not going to motivate us in that instance. We're already terrified that we're going to have this miserable death.
Yeah, and we're already weird like kid I said, with the disease.
My grandfather lived with me. He had type 1 growing up. So he had diabetic retinopathy. He was legally blind, congestive heart failure, everything wrong with him. He had like femoral bypass surgery to try and get blood flow back in his legs. Got infected, gangrenous, toe amputation, had to live out. Like I watched him have a bad death.
Yeah.
And to my recollection, my parents never overtly was like, that's going to happen to you. And I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah.
But there were other people that definitely were like, make sure you keep taking care of yourself. Your kidneys are going to get bad. Make sure you take care of yourself. And that made me take worse care of myself because I was a defiant 17-year-old and I was like, screw you. You're not going to tell me how to deal with my disease because it's mine.
Well, and then...
And that was just me. I mean, you...
No, that was like exactly the same because I had that, which was like, oh, hey, thanks. You're just basically telling me I'm going to die in my 30s.
Yeah. What's the point of living? Right?
Yeah, it's horrible. Like, I'm going to go blind. I'm going to lose my feet. I'm going to lose my hand. I'm going to have heart issues and kidney. Like, you're telling me all this terrible stuff's going to happen. And then I remember one appointment. I don't think it was my normal pediatric endocrinologist. He may have been like too busy and they sent me to one of his assistants or something like that. But I remember this guy telling me, he was like, you know, even if like take good care of yourself, but just be aware, like even if you take good care of yourself, like you're deaf, you know, just be ready. You're going to have to deal with this and that and the circulation and the, so you tell that to a teenager. Like, what motivation or hope do I have to take care of myself? You're basically telling me, well,
what you do doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You could take care of yourself as best as you can, but in the end, it's not going to matter.
Yeah.
The first time I encountered that was, and this is actually funny because at church, Pastor Matt had talked about a sermon about, you know, overcoming the impossible and like how God can overcome the impossible.
Yeah.
But somebody has to call it impossible first.
Yeah.
And to that time, nobody had ever told me my diabetes was forever. And so I had an eye appointment. I went to an optometrist, not an ophthalmologist. I'm not going to say where, but they didn't dilate my eyes. And
they didn't do any of the right procedures.
And she was like, you have type 1 diabetes. What's your A1C? I was like 6.2. Pretty good. And she's like, okay, well, your diabetic retinopathy got worse. It's now moderate. And I was like, what do you mean worse? She's like, well, it showed up on your last exam. I was like, last dude told me I was fine.
Right.
And she was like, well, it doesn't really matter that your A1C is 6.2. Like,
it doesn't matter your A1C is nearly perfect.
Yeah. Your eyes are going to start bleeding. The more you have it, the more your eyes are going to bleed, the longer you have diabetes. And then I zoned out at that point because I was terrified. Like, I didn't, and this was, This was only like 20. I'm 30 now. I was like 28, maybe 29. Wow. It wasn't that long ago. And so I zoned out and I went to pay my bill. They're like, do you want to look at frames? I was like, no, can you print my script and I'll come back? They're like, I don't know if your insurance covers it. I said, I don't care. Give me the script. I'm going to buy them online anyway. Like,
I was
so rude that I look back at it. I'm like, that lady didn't deserve that. So I kind of felt bad. And then made an appointment with an ophthalmologist, got in. He was like, yeah, you're fine. He's like, great job. He's like, God bless them, but they don't have as much experience. Like, he said it so politically. I was like, so you're telling me that they're dumb for diabetes? He was like, they don't have as much experience as I do.
He's like, how am I tactfully going to say this?
I guess there's like signs when they do look at your eyes that can be like, this person might have diabetes, but they're benign findings, and that's even what my endocrinologist
said.
It's
not meaning that you've got the retinopathy and are going blind.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but she was the first person to tell me it was impossible, and I was like, "Yeah, well, thank you."
Like,
I'm never going to come back and see you, but thank you.
Yeah.
So, like, I made it 17 years without somebody telling me that it was impossible to cure diabetes, and I still don't think I'm with you. I'm not going to get cured. I'm going to get healed, but that can be a whole other thing if we want it to be.
Yes.
But sorry, I didn't mean to jump into the middle of your story, but that just got me.
Your life, my life together. That's what this is supposed to be. Boom.
Oh, you killed that though. That was sound effects. No good. No good.
After that, kind of like what you were saying, oh man, it made me like, what's the point? Why take care of myself?
Yep.
You know, like, better, especially because I'd always wanted like a family, and you know, and so part of me was like, well, why does that even matter? I'm not gonna be able to have a family because if I'm gonna die in my 30s, you know, if I'm gonna be blind by the time I'm 30, and
you're
all
a fantastic
this stuff.
Looking corpse, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah.
Very animated for being lifeless.
For being dead, and you know, these are actually you know, like robotic hands and feet, and you know, because obviously I lost them from
the future is now.
Right. The future is now. So it was just that just made me taking care of myself 10 times worse. Because I was like, oh, I don't care. Like, you're telling me, you tell someone, basically, you're hopeless. And why would they put in any effort to take care of themselves? Which is a whole other issue of, like, what frustrates me with some of the medical field and how they do things. So, kind of, almost from the same time frame, kind of like you talked about, I didn't really take care of myself. Like, I didn't really check my blood sugars. I almost didn't care about my A1C. I would only go to the doctor when I absolutely had to, when my prescriptions were out and I had to go to the doctor to for them to write me another prescription.
Yep.
You know, other than that,
and then you'd
like,
still try to cancel it last minute or no
right,
show.
And be like, oh, I can't make it, but can you fill my prescription? You know, and then when I ended up moving to Kansas City, I found a really, really great endocrinologist at
first.
Shout
out to good endocrinologists. Yeah.
Shout out to good endocrinologists that make it not seem like climbing Mount Everest to take care of yourself and get yourself back into good levels, like, and actually give you kind of some hope for the future.
Yeah. Thanks, Beth, because I'm going to make you listen to this.
Do it.
That was my endocrinologist who recently retired.
Nice.
She freaking saved my life more than anybody knows.
Yeah. I don't remember what that doctor's, my good doctor's name was. Problem was, after like a year, he retired.
Boo.
Yeah. So I was like getting back on track.
Ugh.
And then he retired. And the office that I was at, one, it was hard for them to, because they were like, oh, well, the other doctors at their office weren't picking up new patients. So they're trying to figure out like who to send me to in their office while all the other doctors are like overbooked. And they finally sent me to one. And they kind of, they were one of those doctors that's overly booked, too busy, that just kind of comes in, looks at your chart for like 2 minutes and is like, yeah, okay, so what prescriptions do you need? Okay, yes, yeah, sounds good. All right, bye. And yeah, walks back out of
they
the
room. They were script writers and left you to fend for yourself.
Right.
Which, when you get to a certain point, like, I'm kind of at that point right now. But when you're struggling like you were,
when you're
talking
just
about
trying
right now,
to, yeah, get back to, because I had, at that point, I had the motivation of like, let me try to get back to a good spot of taking care of myself. But yeah, when you have been so poor at taking care of yourself, it's hard to get back on track, it's, you know, without a lot of help.
I mean, it's like, it's like anything, at least any health thing. I mean, it literally is a deep, dark hole. And like, it's hard to fathom what those words mean.
Yeah.
Unless you've been in it. And like, I'm not comparing with like, people deal with things a lot worse than type 1 diabetes. I'm not trying to oversell what we have or undersell what other people have. But for somebody living with a disease, a chronic disease, that takes a physical, emotion, and mental toll on you.
Yeah.
And eventually financial toll on you, which compounds the first three things that I already said.
Yep.
Not shout out to that $5,800 bill I haven't paid yet. my account's frozen. Somebody sponsor me. No, it's fine. It's all fine. but you're in that place and you're saying like, why is tomorrow going to be any different? And and you can want to get better physically, but getting over that mental hump is terrible. Saying the last 6 years have been horrible. What makes tomorrow different? Yep. Why is tomorrow? How am I going to do this tomorrow? And I remember like trying to chip at it away here and there. It wasn't working. I had some weird GI thing going on and they worked me up for Crohn's because it's another autoimmune disease, blah, blah, blah. And in the midst of that, the MA who worked with Beth at the office gave me a call and I was like, oh, David, did you hear that I was sick and I have a lot going on? He's like, no, you popped into my head. And I said to Beth, Zach hasn't been in a while. Let's call him. And I was like,
That's pretty amazing.
And he's like, how's it going? And I was like, things are terrible and I don't know what to do. And I was like crying on the phone with him. He's like, come in. I was like, you guys are going to yell at me. He's like, we're not going to yell at you. Like, we're going to help you.
Pause for pup difficulties.
Pause for puppies. Pause for puppies. That's P-A-U-S-E, not P-A-W-S for P-U-P-P-I-E-S.
Please leave that part in the podcast.
No. So I remember him calling me and I was like, you're going to yell at me. He said, no, we're going to help you. So I went in and I mean, they're like, have you been testing? No. Have you been changing your sites? No, I've been trying to make the supplies last because I knew you could only write so many scripts without seeing me, blah, 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 blah. And so they stuck like a Libre on me. They're like, come back in 2 weeks and we'll scan it and we'll just see what's going on. In the meantime, test your blood sugar, see where it's at. So I tested it here. Barely tested it. And they after the 2 weeks, they scanned it. And it was like right before Christmas. And I remember Lex and I were shopping for like a bottle of like liquor or something to make punch at her uncle's house. And a doctor called me, not Beth. Beth was on vacation. And they were like, what's going on? And I was like, what? They're like, your A1C is a 14.6.
Oh.
And they're like, I was like, I should send you to the hospital right now. I was like, oh yeah, I'm not going to go to the hospital. And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, I'm not going to go to the hospital. Like, there's too much going on. Like, still that defiant. Like, I wasn't quite ready. And they're like, okay. So I talked to Beth. Like, she's in Florida. Like, she was on vacation or something like that. And she was like, tell him to do this. And so, like, again, shout out, Beth. Good for you. Going to make you listen to this. And so basically, like, they just doubled my basal rates for everything. And then they put another Libre on me, and I went back in 2 weeks, and I was down to, like, 9 point something. So, like, they're like, okay, we're working on it.
Yeah.
It might have been low tens, actually. But high nines, low tens, it's all the same. Still pretty piss poor, but a whole lot better than 14.6 was.
That is wild.
I wasn't coma range. And literally, we just took it from there, and it was baby steps. And I'd see Beth every month or 2 months, and then it was every 3 months, obviously. And it was like 10.2, 9.8, 9.6. And then I was like testing more because insurance companies wouldn't give me a Dexcom until I tested my blood sugar 4 times a day for 30 days straight or something like that. And like, those are the people that need the CGM. Those are the people right. not testing their blood sugar. Right. Why are you stupid?
That's who it's made for.
So just the fact that I was testing my blood sugar more and taking insulin to correct it.
Yeah.
She was like, all right, this is good. You're gaining weight because you're taking more insulin, but whatever. And then once I got the Dexcom, I mean, I was down on the sevens and I was below seven for a year, like a whole year. And then I was in the sixes, like low sixes. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, she told me she was going to retire. I was like, I'm hitting below six before you retire. And she's like, that's like really hard
to do.
That's
super hard to
do. I was like, I'm going to do it. And so my second to last appointment was, it was going to be my last appointment. It was like six or something. And I was like, I want to see you one more time before you retire. She's like, all right, we'll squeeze you in. I was like, I have to do it. And so at the next appointment, I was like, do my A1C again. She's like, okay, do the A1C. It's like 5.9. I was like, ha,
you're
told
like,
you. And then I kept it at 5.9 for like a year or something like that. And then my last one was like 6.1 or something. And Mike was like,
I mean, that's
good
still,
job.
Yeah, that's still.
Still pretty good.
That's still really good.
But yeah, that was my come to terms with, you know, I'm married now and it's not my own life anymore. Like my decisions are affecting my wife because we had been married for a good amount of time by that point.
Yeah.
And she'd like kind of ask, but I'd always give her like bad attitude, which I don't want to be doing that to my spouse anyway.
Yeah.
Let alone my best friend, let alone like my whole entire world. So I was like, well, the only way I'm not going to have attitude with her is if I actually take care of it. Because the only reason I was giving her attitude is because I was so, you know, ashamed of what I was doing to myself because I knew it affected her too.
Well, and talking about the ashamed thing too, like one, that's also the problem with diabetics and trying to like kind of fear monger them is like, we know what we're supposed to do. Like we know.
We're not dumb.
It's not like, yeah, we're not dumb and being like, oh, wait, I'm supposed to check my blood sugar. Like we know, but it's this weird denial, depression, like frustration, hopelessness thing. And then the more that you nag on us about like, oh, you're not doing what you're supposed to, the more that like it just piles on like, yes, I know my A1C is not supposed to be 14. Like, but so it was interesting. My A1C never got to 14.
So,
but
I won't say A1C is not the right word because that wasn't a three. It was the 2 weeks I had to leave Rayon.
Yeah.
The average was would have been an estimated 14.6.
Okay.
So, but honestly, it was probably between 13 or 14 anyway. Let's be honest. Because I hadn't changed my lifestyle that much. So,
yeah.
I should have been dead.
Yeah.
Why not?
And I was the same way there for a long time. I was having A1Cs and like consistently in the high nines or the tens. And it was one of those where I would like BS it through the appointment just to like get my prescriptions. And it didn't help that I got that good doctor in Kansas City for a short period of time who actually laid out a plan and wanted to like help walk me back down to healthy levels. And then when he retired, things kind of uprooted again because I kept on getting bounced between doctor and doctor and doctor, mm-hmm. just trying to find someone consistent. And I was so frustrated with it that it was just like, whatever, just give me my prescription. And so I was kind of at the same spot where I wasn't taking care of I was taking a little bit better care of myself, but not much.
Yeah.
Until I actually had a couple instances where I had, where I passed out.
Really?
So I had one instance where...
From highs or lows?
Lows.
Okay.
But most of those lows were overcorrecting for things. But like one was when I was asleep at my apartment. My roommate like knew I was supposed to be getting ready for work. and like I wasn't up, so like knocked on the door, didn't answer, like kind of walked in, and he said I was like, he tried to wake me up and I wouldn't wake up, and then I started basically having a seizure,
yeah,
like seizing, and so he, you know, called 911 and I woke up with paramedics in my room and an IV in my arm, you know. And so I had two of those where I like passed out at home, and I had another one.
That's scary, man.
Yeah. And that was kind of,
thank God you had a roommate.
Yeah. And I, one, Steven, my roommate, if you ever
shout out Steven,
like he has saved my life. So,
thanks, Steven.
Yeah. Thanks, Steven.
You're the man.
You are the man. So like I, yeah, that was kind of my come to Jesus moments, because I'm thick-headed enough that I had to have more than one for me to like,
did you
finally get to where I was like, all right, I better start actually taking care of myself.
Did you ever like test your blood sugar and then put a lower number in your pump, so when your doctor looked at the data, they thought you were doing better, even though when they checked your A1C, they were like, this kid's so full of it.
So that didn't help, because they would also take my meter. they already knew.
Oh, I never brought my meter with me.
I would also do that sometimes, where I just didn't bring my meter with me, and they would be like, and they knew, because I typically wouldn't really enter my blood sugar into my pump. I would just read my meter, put in like however many grams, and I would do my own estimate for like a correction and stuff. Yeah. Units. Yeah. So then after I had some bad incidents like that, and I was like, I'm actually going to die. Like if I don't take care of myself, you know, I'm actually going to wind up dead. Yeah. And so I was trying to find like a consistent doctor. And I remember talking to someone at the doctor's office, and they were like, well, because another one of my doctors that I got stuck with, and it wasn't, I didn't have a great relationship with that doctor. It was more just kind of like the doctor knew I wasn't taking care of myself. I knew the doctor knew, and we just almost like pretended, you know, that it was fine, you know, and they would give me my prescriptions.
Yeah.
They retired. And so again, they were trying to find me, and they were like, well, we have some of these, PAs, and you could see one of them. And so I did.
Shout out
I
PAs.
Went to, yeah. I went to my first appointment with the PA was, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but if I remember your name at some point, thank you. Like, you got me back on the right track. And she was looking at it, and she did the same thing that kind of that one good doctor did, and was like, okay, like, you're uncontrolled right now, so let's get you on a plan. And she was not very good with the technological aspects of it. And so she was like, well, there's this other PA in the office who's great with the pumps and all the technology with that. And I had not, like, I had been on the Medtronic glucose sensor for a little bit, but I didn't really like it, and I didn't use it consistently, or I didn't calibrate it consistently. And so she started talking to me about
calibrations. I forgot about those.
Those sucked.
Yeah. Shout out Dexcom for not having calibrations hardly ever.
And being remarkably accurate even without the calibrations.
All right, continue. Sorry.
So, she was like, well, the other PA in the office is great with the pumps and all the technology with it. I think, like, here's a plan to kind of get you back on track, but I really think you should go see her, because she will get you all squared away with the pump and all that stuff. So I ended up switching to the other PA, who, shout out, Jackie Johnson. She's fantastic. 'Cause she was the first.
Go, Jackie, go.
Yeah, she was the first medical professional I had seen since like early teenage years that had helped me get my A1C below 7.
That's awesome.
Yeah, into the 6s. And she's the one that got me onto the Tandem pump, the T-Slim, and got me the Dexcoms. And that's been like life-changing. ever since. It's the most normal I've been able to live because I don't have to stab my fingers all the time. And
yep.
With the auto corrections and all the stuff, it's been awesome. So, and kind of like what you said, it's by the grace of God that I don't have all these horrible health problems with how poorly I took care of myself. I really do attribute it to God watching out for me and protecting me.
Yeah.
And so I'm 32 and I'm not dead yet. I'm not blind. I'm not missing any appendages. I don't have kidney problems like, you know, all the people told me when I was a kid that I was going to have. So it's
not shout out to those people for lying.
Yeah. And trying to scare people. Scare tactics don't work.
Yeah.
And then it's just been, it's been a whole other journey with the like kind of depression stuff to go from like, it's hopeless, like screw it, whatever. If I die, I die, to going, okay, like I can take care of myself. I can be responsible. And if I'm responsible, I can have a fairly normal life and I can actually have a healthy life, you know, and I can have a successful life.
Yeah.
You know, but that, I mean, that's taken years and years of processing through things.
Oh, 100%. And the only reason I'm controlling my diabetes as best I can is because I've conquered, well, I won't say I've conquered, but the mental aspect, I've learned how to get through that. Like, and again, this is heavily due to Beth just telling me the disease just sucks. There's no way around it. Like, we can believe we're going to be healed, which we do, but it sucks. Okay. Yeah. It does. It someday you can do the same thing on a Tuesday and do the same thing on a Wednesday and you can have totally different blood sugars. Yeah. And getting that beat into my head, knowing that it's not anything I'm doing anymore, because I'm taking care of myself,
right?
That sometimes you're just going to have bad days. Every day's a new day. If I wake up from a day prior that was terrible, today's a new day. Yeah. Some days I like to do what I call the factory reset and water and lettuce are my meals until my sugar comes down and I stabilize. Like,
yeah.
No, if my blood sugar's in the 200s, I'm not going to have pasta for lunch and then pizza for dinner. Like, no, you're going to have to make those changes. Yeah. But knowing that every day's a new day, and back then when I think every day's a new day, but it's a new day for failure. Now I'm like, every day's a new day is a new day that I can, it's different. It's not yesterday. It's today. And I can do my best.
Yeah. And just the fact that, yes, there's going to be bad days, but that doesn't mean, that doesn't make it hopeless. Like,
exactly.
You know, even with not taking care of myself and even with, you know, struggling with a lot of that mental aspect, I've still been able to do a lot that people said I wouldn't, you know.
Yeah.
With having diabetes, whether it be from sports to, you know, working a career in law enforcement for a while, like, you know. And it really comes down to just almost for me, a lot of it comes down to pre-planning, right? For check my pump in the morning before, or at the start of my day before I go to work, to make sure, hey, do I have enough insulin in there?
Oh, that's hard to do sometimes. You know? So many times I get to work and I'm like, oh man, I don't get lunch today.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Because little things like that would, when I was, you know, younger and not taking care of myself, they would lead to things where it's like, oh, I didn't realize I didn't have insulin because I wasn't paying attention and I just ate this massive lunch and I look at my pump and I've got like a unit left in it because I wasn't paying attention to it because I didn't care, and now I know I'm going to be like skyrocketing all day until, you know, and I'm going to be getting sick and, you know, or you know, taking things like glucose gels with me places. And it still is. Yeah. I actually on Amazon have a scheduled order every month and order glucose gels It's a reoccurring order. Like, I feel like part of it is just breaking down that mental mountain into small chunks. Because you look at it
100%.
Like when you are off the rails, or you're new and young, or even if you're like a parent with a kid, like you look at it, it looks like this giant mountain.
Yeah.
To learn how to handle it.
I know it was a long time ago. I know nobody ever talked to me about the mental aspect of it.
Absolutely.
Like
not.
Even healthcare provider, parents, now that like nobody was like, and I don't know if it's different times and they're changing. I'm hoping that physicians are kind of doing it now. But it needs to be talked about that. Yeah. It's not just a physical disease. It's very much a mental, affects your mental and emotional state.
Yeah. Well, because it affects so much of your life, of course it's going to affect, you know, your mental state, you know, your mental health.
Yeah.
I do know, and I will give credit to my pediatric endocrinologist later on when I was, you know, an older teenager and not really taking care of myself. He did mention to both me and my mom, like, oh, they have diabetic counselors to help people, which, of course, I was a stubborn, kind of snotty teenager. I was like, I'm not doing that. I don't want to go to a counselor, you know.
Yeah.
Which, you know, but I think if you start preparing someone early on, or prepping yourself to like, okay, this is not just, like you said, it's not just a physical issue. It's emotional, mental, like, you can have better success, especially like I was saying, it's this giant mountain, but if you break it into smaller pieces and tackle that one at a time, like you can get better at it. Like the simple thing of like, okay, prep having glucose gels in your car, in your house, in, you know, at your lunchbox that you take to work or whatever, so that you don't have to sit there and panic if you start feeling shaky, you yeah. know, like, or prep, like, and if I took it one step at a time when I was getting back onto being healthy, like my PA took it one step at a time going, okay, well, first let's just start adjusting your basal rate. Once we get that kind of adjusted to your schedule, then we'll start looking at your ratio of carbs to insulin, and we'll yep. start working at that. Once we get that pretty dialed in, then we'll work on the aspect of like, oh, you tend to always forget to bolus at lunch, or you tend to always forget to, you know.
Yeah. Change your correction factor, your sensitivity, your, all that fun.
Which is the awesome part of the programming on the pumps nowadays. Oh my God, you know? Yeah. Like, so
I don't, what does our pump do? Like 0.05 or something like that.
0.05 like
stupid. So
units.
Yeah. It's not even a half unit. That's, I'm not good at math. That's less than a half unit. Yeah. Everybody kind of land this bad boy a little bit.
Okay.
What's one thing you wish people knew about type 1 diabetes?
Oh man.
And why is it that if I lose weight, it's not going to make it go away?
Yes. I mean, pretty much that is that people think that type 1 diabetes is because you were overweight or you ate a bunch of sugar. Like, I can't tell you how often I had the comment like, oh, so you must have been a fat kid that ate a bunch of sweets, right?
Yeah, but like, you know, my uncle had diabetes and he lost some weight and it went away. I was like, I'm so happy for him. That's great. They're like, you should. And I was like, you should stop talking.
Yeah. I think
I'm more graceful now that I'm an adult and I've learned how to be like,
how to be tactful.
Respectful. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's probably up there for me. And then in terms of like people who have type 1 diabetes, it's okay to not be okay with it. Like,
yeah,
it's okay that either you have spiraled or you're in a spiral right now. I can promise people I was in a pretty dark, dark spiral at the very, 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 very bottom. And I got out after 3.5 years of working at it.
Spiraling. Yeah.
Now I'm 5.9. So
that's phenomenal.
You can do it.
Yeah, I would say probably some of the biggest things. I don't know if I can narrow it down to one thing, you know, but it's the thing of kind of like that is a lot of people, I've heard this several times too, is that don't downplay diabetes. Don't downplay like, yes, I'm thankful that there are other diseases. There are other things that are God awful and horrible that I'm so grateful that I don't have, but that doesn't negate the challenge that diabetes is.
100%. Yeah, that's good.
I've heard so many times people be like, well, at least you don't have cancer, or at least you don't, you know.
Yeah. I'm very happy I don't have that.
I am.
My life still isn't at the quality that a normal person's is. Yeah. So let me have my feels.
Yeah. And at the same point, kind of with your first point, is don't blame a person.
Don't tell me to eat cinnamon. If one more person tells me to put cinnamon in my coffee, cinnamon? I'm going to slap you in the face. That is good. Cinnamon and coffee is good. Hasn't cured my diabetes, though. So back off.
But the fact that, like, a lot of people think that it's your own fault because they think you were a fat kid that gave, you know, and even if you are talking to a type two who is overweight and ate terrible and, you know, like,
still not an excuse to blame them. Don't shame them.
Like,
you're just a jerk at that
fear
point.
Fear and shame doesn't work to get anybody healthy.
No.
Like, maybe do a little research before if you meet someone that's diabetic, the same way that if I meet someone that's got, you know, leukemia or something, I'm not going to be like, oh, well, you know what you need to do.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to listen and sympathize with them and maybe do a little bit more of my own research before I start telling them what to do or why.
And even if you think that's the reason or something, kindness and support is how you, it's how you help people. Just be kind to people. It's easy. Support people that are going through it. Because even if it is their fault, like, diseases aside, if somebody's going through something and it is their fault, making them feel worse about it, literally in the history of humankind,
has never worked.
Be kind to them, support them, and they're going to do better.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for listening to me and Zach. He will be on again in the future. We have a lot of things planned and not all...
more fun, entertaining.
Yeah, they're not all going to be this deep and heavy, but some of them might be because the kind of talks we like to have. But I mean, we both have an affinity for one Mr. Jack Black.
Yes.
So Jack Black is going to have a pretty heavy part in this podcast. I'm going to try and get him to guest star on it someday, but I wouldn't hold
that would blow my mind.
Wouldn't hold your breath on that one. But yes, we plan to do some Jack Black watching films and ranking or reacting.
We're
fun
not
stuff.
Cool enough.
We're going to have fun. But thanks for listening and catch the next episode.
Also,
yes.
If anyone I'm spitballing this at you, processing out loud while we're on the podcast. If anyone has questions or comments or wants to talk or reach out,
I meant about, to say that
diabetes.
I got too excited about Jack Black.
I mean, he's exciting.
Yeah.
If Jack Black wants to reach out and talk about diabetes,
yeah. Okay, continue.
But I don't know. Is there a place they can contact you or us or
yes? Away? So there's going to be the email linked with the podcast's website, Facebook. There is a page and then an Instagram as well. So DM, message, post, email, subscribe to the episodes, and hopefully there'll be some type of like email newsletter that will be set up just to keep in touch. But yes, there are a lot of ways to keep in touch, whether it's a question for me or for Zach. I will make sure he gets the question. Or if it's not questions and you just need support or somebody to talk to, literally, we are here.
Always
for all two of you listeners.
Yeah. Always open to talk.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up because I meant to say that.
Yeah.
Now, thank you all for listening and we'll see you next time.